I've been visiting Japan, the Lake Biwa area. I was on the eastern shore, and the view from Lake Yogo, highly recommended, where you can see Lake Yogo and the north of the lake and Lake Biwa at the same time. It's amazing. But then I was switching to a new Airbnb on the western side of the lake, so I didn't actually have to travel that far. I just had to busy myself for the afternoon, until my new Airbnb was available. So I was just looking around at the train stuff, and I'm like, all right, where can I go from here? Here's a city way up north called Suruga, and I can get there with my train card, and I can just go there for the afternoon and see what it is. It's a very northern city in Japan. I just went there for no reason. And then when I got there, I unexpectedly discovered all these bronze statues. So we just looked at some of the pictures, but feel free to look them up. The Leiji Matsumoto statues in Suruga, which I got to admit I didn't recognize right away because I'm vaguely aware of his work. He's a very famous guy, but I just never saw any of his stuff. And I slowly started to piece it together like, oh, isn't this that Galaxy Express guy? Like all these statues, they have like the tall, skinny lady and they all kind of look similar. So then I looked it up and yeah, it's just they made, he's not even from there because at first I thought maybe it was, because he was from that town, but he's from down in like Fukuoka Prefecture in the south. So I thought maybe, since I don't know much about this guy's work, but these statues were so cool, what better way to fix that situation than to watch some of his work?
The statues are absolutely fabulous. And there must be, oh, 15, 20 of them.
Yeah, and I didn't manage to get pictures of all of them. I don't know if I found them all, but it looks like there might be 28 as many as. So yeah, I only have a little bit of information, also just because I'm just some random guy who just randomly came into this town. But it seems that so Leiji Matsumoto statues are in Suruga to commemorate the city's 100th anniversary in 1999, and it's because Suruga is a historic railway and port city. I believe Suruga, I read somewhere, it's the first city on the Sea of Japan side of Japan to have a train station and to have the trains go through and everything. So, the Matsumoto Symbol Road, it's called, is where you walk down the road and you see all these different statues. It features statues from Galaxy Express 999, which I think I read they pronounce it as Galaxy Express 39, and that symbolizes the railways, even though in this case it's railways in outer space. And Space Battleship Yamato, which symbolizes the port part of the town. Like when I showed you my picture when I did get to the Sea of Japan, it is like still a big port city. And the whole thing, I guess, symbolizes Suruga's future-oriented vision as a hub of science and transportation. So it is like, again, kind of weird, kind of a stretch, because it's like this small city with like 60-some thousand people. It was nice enough. I walked around and like, oh, this place is pretty cool. I like it. But yeah, the statues completely caught me off guard. And as a tourist thing, it definitely worked because I was there on a rainy, random Wednesday afternoon and there were a bunch of other people taking pictures and stuff. So nice work, Saruga. You did it.
Well, and it's so weird that they would choose, well, not weird in a way. I mean, they're famous for their anime, but when you think that somebody said, hey, let's do a whole series of anime styles structures from this show, most countries would say, oh, no, we can't do that. And they'd have some boring old, whoever established the railroad, or they might set up pictures of what the rail was like 100 years ago or whatever. I mean, who would have thought that they would take an anime show and create sculptures of these? And they are fabulous. They're just beautifully done and created. Yeah, I can see why you were surprised. I mean, you're just walking around and wow, what are these things? They look like anime stuff. Yeah, they are like so different.
Yeah, when I saw like the first one or two, I didn't clue in at all. It's just like, oh, these are a bit different. These are kind of neat. And yeah, they just kept happening and just kept happening. And yeah, and that's the thing that is so interesting about visiting Japan is I really don't know what the experience would be like to grow up here. I don't know how easy that would be. It seems like it's a pretty stressful society. But if you're just visiting and you're just walking around, because then I also showed you at the station near where my Airbnb is, this giant Gulliver's Gulliver's Travels statue, or it's this huge Gulliver towing ships behind him. And it's just like, as an outsider who's just passing through, there's so much fun, cool stuff everywhere.
Yeah, that big Gulliver statue. The first thing I said, hey, you like, that looks like some colonial white guy. Like, what the heck is he doing over here?
Yeah.
Well, it's Gulliver from Gulliver's Travels.
And I'm sure, yeah, again, if you live here and you're in school and you're studying to try to get into university and trying to get a job, and I'm sure it's real stressful. But yeah, just as somebody passing through, A plus, thumbs up. It's great.
Yeah, like who's this giant man pulling these boats? These little tiny boats. Like, what the heck is that all about?
And I love that in both those cases, with the Gulliver statue and with Suruga, like I didn't go there to see the statues. I didn't even know they were there. I just went there because I was just to go there. And that happens so often. Just, or the same thing with Lake Yogo, I was just saying. It's only because I just saw it on the map. I'm like, oh, I wonder what this is. There's a little tiny lake above the big, huge lake. And then it's one of the best views I've ever seen in my life, where you can see both lakes at the same time. And yeah, just walk around Japan, just go places, get a train card, and it's crazy all the stuff you can see.
Well, and especially the Gulliver thing. I mean, they're a whole entirely different culture than we are, and yet there's Gulliver. He's an English guy, an Englishman. Here he is. He's giant. That is a big freaking statue.
So yeah, then I thought, like, why not? Again, yeah, I almost felt like a bad anime fan, because it is even of my approximate era. You know, I watched anime way back in the day. Well, I guess it's like 80s, 90s. This is maybe a little bit before my time even. But I almost felt a little bad that I'm looking at all these statues and I'm like, geez, I really don't know this show. I've never seen it before. And then it occurred to me, well, we do have this podcast where we just watch random TV and movies and, you know, just to get a sense of the history of different stuff. So why not? So I got basically this Galaxy Express 3-9 show, or it's a manga. It's a manga that started in 1977. And this guy, he has a whole bunch of different works that are all very famous, but this was a movie version that came out in 1979. So maybe that's another reason why I didn't see it. I mean, that's the year I was born, but I'm sure by the time it got to North America, I was probably at the right age to see it. I just never did. So I thought, heck, why don't we just watch that?
Might as well. We've already seen all these beautiful sculptures, so now we can see if we can relate to any of them in a show.
Yeah. Yeah, there seems to be very prominently a tall, skinny lady and a little boy that showed up a lot. So I guess we'll find out who they are. And maybe I'll have some more information or facts or whatever for after we watch it. But yeah, it's kind of more fun to go in a little bit blind to all we know is the statues, and we can go from there.
If you think about it, life is like a kind of journey, one that begins and ends in the sea of stars. While on the road, sooner or later, all travelers who endlessly chase the images of their dreams must eventually nod off, drifting into an eternal sleep. Old lives are ended, new lives are begun, and running through it all is a steam engine. A train carrying upon its endless rails the dreams, the hopes, the ambitions, and the youth of all humanity.
So that's the first half. So how's it hitting you so far?
It's pretty good. I gotta say, the sculptures are very, very accurate.
Yeah, it is neat seeing the different people. Like, well, I mean, I didn't quite know what to expect because obviously we saw them all as bronze. But like when the glass looking lady shows up and stuff like that, it's like, oh, cool. Or even the guy with the conductor guy with the darkness around his face. I'm like, oh, yeah, I saw that guy. You know, I just keep recognizing guys.
Yeah. And there were scenes like there's one point where she wraps him up in the cloak. That's what one of the sculptures was like that. And there's another one where she's standing. They're just standing side by side, and he's got the hat on and he's got the little face all covered up and everything. But he's just, when you see the sculpture, you just think it's a woman and a child. But when you can actually see it in the show, like I remember seeing them, but no, yeah, that was the sculpture.
It is interesting too, just stuff of that era where, I mean, to like extremely oversimplify it, but anime did basically spawn from Disney, you know, big eyes and stuff. And, you know, the guy who did Astro Boy was one of the early pioneers, but obviously this guy was too. So it does have that kind of, like, I'm thinking of it that way of like, in 1979, especially, like, what a cool thing to see in the theater. Because besides Disney, I don't know that there was much else, you know, but it still has that strange mix of like, it's definitely more grown up than a Disney cartoon, but it still has like just the kids goofing off. And it does have some kind of silly things here and there. Like, it's definitely appropriate for a kid to watch, but then it has, I think, a little more meat on its bones, maybe emotionally speaking, than most cartoons had at the time. But then at the on the third side of it, the emotional parts are kind of like melodrama, you know? They're very like, oh no, oh, I miss my mom, she's dead, you know? Like, it's so...
And they certainly know how to drag out certain scenes, like when the train is first leaving Earth, going off to wherever. The song. And the song went on and on and on. And I know it does give you the impression that a lot of time is passing and a lot of distance is passing, but I was getting kind of, okay, all right, we kind of got the picture. Move on with the song. Move on, quick.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the song, too. I thought I would bring that up, too, because that's where it most felt like the 70s. Where I'm curious, because like we're watching the dub, and they went all out. They did a whole dubbed song instead of just putting in whatever the original Japanese song was. So I presume the original one was the same song or the same style. I hope so. I hope they didn't change it, because that is the one time where it felt like the 70s. Oh, he rides the train through the space. It definitely felt like a song of that era.
And they certainly have no hang-ups about showing sexy dames in virtual nudity. I mean, here we're this is the end of the first part. Here's this ice girl standing there with a perfect body, but obviously she doesn't have a stitch on. And in American TV, oh my God, you couldn't do that. Like morality. Ooh, you just couldn't show that in a child show.
Yeah, I think a lot of that was a lot of what was so fascinating about anime, especially when I was, you know, like 13 or whatever, is all these social mores that, yeah, we have that they just don't care about. Like even in this like quick little shower scene, where not only do we see the blonde girl in the shower, but it's kind of plot relevant because he's, you know, then considering like, I don't know, that didn't look like a robot to me. That looked like a hot naked lady in the shower, but he still sees her and goes, Mom. Like, so there's so much stuff like twisted up in it that is just like fascinating to a young brain that we would never do.
And we're seeing a young prepubescent boy, because I get the impression that this guy, although he thinks he's such a hot shot and he's so grown up, but I don't get the impression that he's even a teenager yet.
Right.
You know, this is like a 10 or 11, or maybe the most he might be 12 years old, but I don't think so. But he's obviously got the eye out for the ladies already, which in reality, of course he would.
It's interesting, too, again, to paint with a broad brush, but in the 80s and the 90s, like that was one of the things that was so, you know, fascinating about anime to us, was like, man, I can't believe they just put tits in their shows and they just don't care. It's like, that's just normal to them. Where it's strange now, or what seems to be happening in the 2020s, is because there's a way more broad international audience for anime. Like it just has become more and more popular. And, you know, they play it on TV and stuff a lot more in North America, or there's whole like anime streaming services and things. So in some ways they've cut back on that. Like it's less common to just have nipples or a panty shot or like just that stuff they would throw in, jiggling boobs and stuff. That's less common, but it's like been like a split in a river where your average show doesn't have as much weird nudity and stuff as it used to. But when they do decide to make a show that's about that, now it's bananas. It's out of control. It's so much more, like even stuff that they play on TV is so much more explicit than it ever was in the 80s and the 90s. Like just as an example, I mean, and they do censor these things on TV. You got to buy the Blu-ray to get the uncensored one. But there's a show based on a manga called Interspecies Reviewers, and it's like a D&D fantasy land. But instead of these guys going off and doing their Dungeons and Dragons adventures, they go to different towns and they go to brothels and they bang like a gorgon lady, you know, with snake's fur hair, or an elf lady who looks young but is really 1,000, or a dwarf or whatever. And then they write a magazine reviewing what it's like to fuck these women that are different fantasy species. And that's just on TV. So it's just weird that things have gotten more chaste and less chaste at the same time. Like, Japan is like tearing itself apart. It's just going in both directions. Anyway, that's the anime update of what's happening now.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I'm really surprised sometimes where I'll see a cartoon and it's not like an adult cartoon. It's not a porn cartoon, but it's a porn cartoon, you know? Where back in the 80s and the 90s, they would just sprinkle stuff in, but it wasn't. Yeah, so anyway, strange times.
Hey, you're a...
Huh?
You'll know him by his hat. It's like the one you're wearing now.
Where did you get that hat?
I might ask you the same question.
It was a gift from your mother on Titan.
My mother? You know my mother?
Sure, if it wasn't for her, I'd be dead now. She gave me this, too.
Is she well? How is she?
Lonely. She'd give anything to see you.
I gave my goodbyes when I left. Come inside, won't you? I'm sure this is more than a social...
Well, that was pretty exciting.
The narrator is kind of a funny aspect, right? Because I keep forgetting, because he only shows up once in a while. And then he'd pop up and say something imperious, and... I mean... Especially, I mean, you know, you got to obviously give things leeway for just the time that they were made, and that things just kind of, you know, melodrama was just more common, especially, I guess, in anime. But that the final line is, "Farewell, last days of youth." What now?
Well, they're leaving themselves wide open for a sequel.
Yeah, and apparently there were this guy who made this, Leiji Matsumoto, he actually just passed away in 2023, quite recently. But yeah, there were various sequels throughout the years. But it was, I mean, to be fair, I guess if it's going to be a bit melodramatic, it was epic. I mean, there's no question about that. If anything, there's too much stuff that happened in that. Like, stuff just kept happening.
Yeah, but if you were a kid, it was well done, because if you were a kid, you'd love that stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking too, I mean, if it were presented in, you know, comic book form, I feel like it makes a lot of sense that way, you know, because it was like a series of kind of distinct adventures he was going on, or different people that he was meeting and then moving on to the next thing. Like specifically, like, you know, when he falls asleep on the train and they're like, next stop, final stop, Planet Maytel, you know, like that's definitely the end of a chapter. And you're just like, what the heck? I got to get the next issue. What does that mean? So it's actually kind of like maybe too much to have it all crammed down your throat in one 2-hour movie. You know, like I bet it kind of is easier to digest in a longer format.
The only fault I had, which I mentioned to you, I said, did we miss something here? And here they're all of a sudden they're in the town and he's with the girl and he's with the handsome star, the other star. And then all of a sudden, that just drops, and he's on that other planet, and he's all by himself, like, with those robots that he does in. And you're like, okay, so how did he get from point A to there? Like, there was no, it is almost like there was a commercial break, and then they picked up after the commercial break, or next chapter. But it's like they didn't finish off the first chapter, like they didn't say farewell, or see you around, or... I'm heading off to the next place and you're not coming with me. There was like no, nothing. It just stopped. And then all of a sudden he was on the other place and doing in all the robots.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think there was anything missing out of our thing because it was 2 hours long. What else could there be? It must be tough though, like adapting stuff like this. Because one thing I was reading, so I do have a little bit of info that I got here that's kind of interesting.
Well, before you say that, I mean, they made such effort all the way along to join this scene in with that scene. But that one scene, it's like, well, okay, so where did those other guys go? And all of a sudden, like, they're gone and he's off on his own again.
So it looks like it was the highest grossing domestic film in Japan in 1979. So it was a huge hit. And it actually came out pretty quickly afterward in America in 1981, and the American version was edited down. So instead of 2 hours, it was only 90 minutes. And, you know, obviously that's the knee-jerk reaction is like, oh, you shouldn't do that. But actually, that doesn't sound so crazy to me. I feel like you could actually edit this story down to 90 minutes pretty easily, probably. Because it was weird. It was like, especially in the early parts, I guess, it felt fast and slow at the same time to me, where it's like things are progressing really quickly and there's all these huge concepts happening and like, oh, now we're on the crazy Galaxy Express and we're going to different planets and stuff. But at the same time, it felt slow because they just kept reiterating, I got to get a robot body. I got to kill this guy who killed my mom. I got to get a robot body. I got to kill this guy who killed my mom, you know? Like, so it felt fast and slow together in a weird way. And then he did kill the guy who killed his mom, and the movie's not over. It was like a whole other plot about a crazy robot planet that he's going to get plugged into.
Yeah.
So yeah, pacing-wise, that is unusual.
Yeah, true enough. He could have ended when he killed that, when he landed on that planet all by himself. And he did them all in. Yes, it certainly could have ended there. But then they have to throw in, don't trust Martel or whatever her name was. Don't trust her. So then you're like, oh, well, okay, well, something's got to happen there then. So I guess then you do have to lead into the next part. But they could have cut out those words out. And if they did, then that would have been the end of it. It could have been the end of it.
And I guess it's like the thing people always say of, you know, the book's better than the movie. I do tend to feel that way about anime also. Like I usually enjoy the comic book versions better. So yeah, maybe I'll, one of these days, maybe I'll grab some of the comics. Because yeah, I do just find, I guess not only that they spread things out longer, but I like with comics that you can, you know, sort of absorb and digest it at your own pace. It is, like, I do feel like this story, in a weird way, is almost too big for a movie. You know, it really is like, man, it went a lot of places, a lot of stuff. But yeah, I'm glad to finally see it. It was really cool. And especially for, like, such early anime. Because I looked up Tezuka, the guy who did Astro Boy, was only born 10 years before this guy. So yeah, this really is, like, some ground floor anime stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's better than more recent stuff, because it just, I don't know, there was just a grandeur to anime back then.
Yes, it had, when you compare it to Astro Boy, which is very two-dimensional, well, this is two-dimensional too, but this had a lot of background stuff going on, a lot of, you know, buildings and tubes that people traveled in, and but it didn't just have, like, when they were showing a space scene with a tube that they were traveling in, it had all kinds of other stuff in the background going on. They spent a lot of time creating scenes. When they would have a planet, they just didn't show a planet. Like, they had all kinds of topography on the planet, and they'd have stars around and everything. They really, they kind of went out of their way to, and buildings, like when the train was leaving on the track, there were always all these buildings in the background. So, yeah, it wasn't just like Astro Boy flying around and you just see Astro Boy. It had all this other stuff going on, too, at the same time. So it was well done. It was well done, especially when you consider that it's over 40 years old. And it was early animation.
And it was. I mean, this is jumping way, way farther back. But, yeah, it is nice that it was not ponderous. Like, it is just, like, fun to watch. Like, it is just space pirates and shooting guns and, like, stuff is happening. Because it's probably not fair to compare it to Metropolis, the 1927 film. But I don't know if you ever saw that, the Fritz Lang movie. Because it has, like, similar, like, a robot lady and a cool city and it looks awesome. But, man, it's brutal. It's so boring. But, I mean, it's from 1927, to be fair. But, yeah, I can't say that about Galaxy Express. It certainly wasn't boring.
I actually found the kid in it kind of obnoxious myself. But hey, he was a kid.
And he really did. He sure did accomplish a lot. You know, he's like, all right, I'm going to set out for revenge. And incredibly, he actually managed it. But then he also took down the entire super duper robot planet. Like, geez, that kid's had a good few weeks or whatever.
Well, and he immediately knows how to fire a gun with extremely good accuracy.
Yeah, Ben, also, like, yeah, that's one of those things about stuff that is for young adults more, is it's one thing if he, like even that, it's not like somebody really trained him on how to use the gun, and it's not like he carefully took his aim and held his breath and like, this is the moment, I can't mess up, I need to shoot this robot guy in the head, or this is all for nothing. He's running forward screaming and amazingly shoots the guy perfectly through the head. It's like, no, you didn't, kid. No, you didn't.
Yeah, he's brandishing. He never even saw that gun before he met that elderly lady who gave it to him. But all of a sudden, he's able to brandish that gun and roll over and fall down and pick up the gun and just shoot with extreme accuracy. Oh, yeah, he's a super, super kid.
It is so eerie, though. It's like creepy, kind of, when it's like such a mix of genres where, you know, it does have the exuberant kid and, you know, even like when they he gets complimented for avenging his mother at the end, it's not even a somber moment. He's like, ah, shucks. Ah, gosh, I did do that. But at the same time, like the taxidermied corpse of his mom was in that guy's time castle. Like, that is so horrifying. That is, like, beyond creepy. And it is just weird. Like, we were talking earlier about how Japan mixes things like that. But that's a good example of, like, this kind of goofball kid who's just firing his gun wildly and your mom's dead body right there. Like, it's very creepy to put those together.
Well, didn't you pick up on something? They didn't explain it really well, but there seemed to be a reincarnation thing going on here. It was like the kid was that guy who died. The older lady was like his mother. It's almost like there was like two phases of reincarnation going on there. And they kept talking about the future and where people would be in the future. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, okay, I don't want to take the time to get into all that stuff while I'm watching this thing, because that's getting kind of heavy here.
Or I also guess maybe I was probably reading the Wikipedia entry and it messed me up. But yeah, that Maytel was saying how also she travels through cloning. So she's like that's why she reminded him of his mom, is because she's cloned the mom's body or something. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. And like, I'll be back, but you won't recognize me. You won't know who I am. So like, you'll be back. Like, but what form will you be? Will you be an older woman? Will you be somebody that he already knows in the present? Like, oh yeah, there was a whole other underpinning going on there of something, but there wasn't enough in the movie to really explain it. Now, maybe if you were reading the comic, that would be revealed. But they kind of just kept touching on it, and then they quickly move out of it. And I was like, what? Is there something happening here and I'm missing? So I think there is.
At the same time, too, though, I guess to kind of wrap it back to that narrator, that's where I do find that kind of funny, is that the narrator is always just not only recapping what's going on, but explaining to us the life lessons that we're supposed to be getting out of this. And that's really not necessary. It's okay for it to be a little confusing and a bit ambiguous, you know, I feel like.
We get the message many, many times that humanity is better than robot life.
Yeah.